Chapter 6. The Code. The Ten Commandments. God's law proclaimed at Mount Sinai, after the Lord had given the people of Israel such evidences of his power, he told them who he was. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. The same God who revealed his power among the Egyptians now spoke his law. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. This chapter is based on Exodus 19:20, 25-40. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. The first and second commandments that Jehovah spoke are against idolatry, because worshiping idols would lead people to great lengths in sin and rebellion and result in offering human sacrifices. God wants to guard against the least approach to such abominations. The first four commandments were given to show people their duty to God. The fourth is the connecting link between the great God and humanity. The Sabbath especially was given for the benefit of mankind and for the honor of God. The last six commandments show our duty to one another. The Sabbath was to be a sign between God and his people forever. In this way, it was to be a sign. All who would observe the Sabbath would show by doing so that they were worshippers of the living God, the creator of the heavens and the earth. The Sabbath was to be a sign between God and his people as long as he would have a people upon the earth to serve him. Now all the people witnessed the thunderings, the lightning flashes, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountains smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. Then they said to Moses, "You speak with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die." And Moses said to the people, "Do not fear, for God has come to test you, and that his fear may be before you, so that you may not sin." So the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, you have seen that I have talked with you from heaven." The majestic presence of God at Sinai, and the commotions in the earth that his presence brought, the fearful thunderings and lightnings that accompanied this visitation of God, so impressed the minds of the people with fear and reverence for his sacred majesty that they drew back instinctively from the awesome presence of God, afraid that they would not be able to endure his terrible glory. The peril of idol worship. Again, God wanted to guard the Israelites from idolatry. He said to them, "You shall not make anything to be with me. Gods of silver or gods of gold you shall not make for yourselves." They were in danger of imitating the example of the Egyptians, making for themselves images to represent God. God wanted his people to understand that he alone should be the object of their worship. When they would overcome the idol-worshipping nations around them, they were not to preserve any of the images of their worship, but destroy them completely. Many of these heathen gods were very costly and of beautiful workmanship, which might tempt those who had witnessed idol worship, so common in Egypt, even to regard these senseless objects with some degree of reverence. The Lord wanted his people to know that it was because of the idolatry of these nations, which had led them to every degree of wickedness, that he would use the Israelites as his instruments to punish them and destroy their gods. After Moses had received the judgments from the Lord and had written them for the people, as well as the promises on condition of obedience, the Lord said to him, "Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come near, nor shall the people go up with him." So Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments. And all the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words which the Lord has said, we will do." Exodus 24, verse 1 to 3. Moses had written not the Ten Commandments, but the judgments that God wanted them to observe and the promises conditional on their obedience to him. He read this to the people, and they pledged themselves to obey all the words that the Lord had said. Moses then wrote their solemn pledge in a book and offered a sacrifice to God for the people. Then he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people. And they said, "Ail that the Lord has said we will do, and be obedient." And Moses took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, "This is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you, according to all these words." The people repeated their solemn pledge to the Lord to do all that he had said and to be obedient. Exodus 24, verse 7, 8. God's eternal law. The law of God existed before human beings were created. The angels were governed by it. Satan fell because he transgressed the principles of God's government. After God created Adam and Eve, he made known to them his law. It was not written yet, but Jehovah taught it to them. In Eden, God instituted the Sabbath of the fourth commandment. After God had made the world and created mankind on the earth, he made the Sabbath for them. After Adam's sin and fall, nothing was removed from the law of God. The principles of the Ten Commandments existed before the fall and were suitable for a holy order of beings. After the fall, the principles of those commandments were not changed, but God gave additional laws to meet human beings in their fallen condition. God established a system requiring sacrificing animals to keep before fallen humanity the truth that the serpent made Eve disbelieve, that the penalty of disobedience is death. The transgression of God's law made it necessary for Christ to die as a sacrifice, and so to make a way possible for sinners to escape the penalty and yet preserve the honor of God's law. The system of sacrifices was to teach sinners humility in view of their fallen condition and lead them to repentance and to trust in God alone through the promised Redeemer for pardon for past transgression of his law. If there had been no transgression of God's law, there never would have been death, and there would have been no need for additional laws to address mankind's fallen condition. Adam taught his descendants the law of God, which was handed down to the faithful through successive generations. The continual violation of God's law called for a flood of water on the earth. Noah and his family preserved the law, and for their right doing, they were saved in the ark by a miracle of God. Noah taught his descendants the Ten Commandments. From Adam onward, the Lord preserved a people for himself, in whose hearts was his law. He says of Abraham, "He obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." Genesis 26, verse 5. The Lord appeared to Abraham and said to him, I am Almighty God. Walk before me and be blameless, and I will make my covenant between me and you, and will multiply you exceedingly. Genesis 17, verse 1, 2. And I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you, in their generations, for an everlasting covenant, to be God to you and your descendants after you. Genesis 17, verse 7. He then required of Abraham and his descendants circumcision, which was a circle cut in the flesh, as a token that God had cut them out and separated them from all nations as his distinct treasure. By this sign, they solemnly pledged not to intermarry with other nations, for by so doing, they would lose their reverence for God and his holy law, and would become like the idol-worshipping nations around them.
By the act of circumcision, they solemnly agreed to fulfill from their side the conditions of the covenant made with Abraham, to be separate from all nations and to be perfect. If the descendants of Abraham had kept separate from other nations, they would not have been lured into idolatry. By keeping separate from other nations, they would have removed a great temptation to engage in those nations' sinful practices and rebel against God. To a great degree, they lost their distinct, holy character by mingling with the nations around them. To punish them, the Lord brought a famine on their land, which compelled them to go down into Egypt to preserve their lives. But because of his covenant with Abraham, God did not abandon them while they were in Egypt. He allowed them to be oppressed by the Egyptians so that they might turn to him in their distress, choose his righteous and merciful government, and obey his requirements. There were only a few families that first went down into Egypt. These increased to a great number. Some were careful to instruct their children in the law of God, but many of the Israelites had witnessed so much idol worship that their ideas of God's law were confused. Those who honored God cried out to him in anguish of spirit to break their slavery and bring them from the land of their captivity so that they could be free to serve him. God heard their cries and raised up Moses as his instrument to deliver his people. After they had left Egypt and God had divided the waters of the Red Sea before them, the Lord tested them to see if they would trust in him who had taken them as a nation out from another nation by signs, trials, and wonders. But they failed to endure the test. They complained against God because of difficulties on the way, and they wanted to return again to Egypt. Written in tablets of stone. To leave them without excuse, the Lord himself condescended to come down on Mount Sinai, enshrouded in glory and surrounded by his angels. In a most sublime and impressive manner, he made known to them his law of 10 commandments. He did not entrust them to be taught by anyone else, not even his angels, but spoke his law himself with an audible voice that all the people could hear. Even then, he did not entrust them to the short memory of a people who were prone to forget his requirements, but wrote them with his own holy finger on tablets of stone. He wanted to prevent all possibility that they would mingle any tradition with his holy laws, or confuse his requirements with human practices. He then came still closer to his people, who were so easily led astray, and would not leave them with merely the 10 commandments of the Decalogue. He commanded Moses to write judgments and laws by God's divine instruction, giving detailed directions regarding what he required them to do. In this way, he guarded the 10 precepts that he had engraved on the tablets of stone. He gave these specific directions and requirements to draw erring human beings to obey the moral law, which they are so prone to violate. If mankind had kept the law of God, as given to Adam after his fall, preserved in the ark by Noah, and observed by Abraham, there would have been no need for the rite of circumcision. And if the descendants of Abraham had kept the covenant that circumcision represented, they would never have gone into idol worship, or been permitted to go down into Egypt, and there would have been no need for God to proclaim his law from Sinai, engrave it on stone tablets,
and guard it by definite directions in the judgments and statutes of Moses. The judgments and statutes. Moses wrote these judgments and statutes that had come from the mouth of God while he was with him on Mount Sinai. If the people of God had obeyed the principles of the Ten Commandments, they would not have needed the specific directions God gave to Moses about their duty to God and to one another, which he wrote in a book. The definite directions that the Lord gave to Moses regarding his people's duty to one another and to the stranger are the principles of the Ten Commandments, simplified and given in a definite manner, so that they need not be mistaken about them. The Lord instructed Moses definitely concerning the ceremonial sacrifices that were to end at the death of Christ. The system of sacrifices foreshadowed the offering of Christ as a lamb without blemish.
The Lord first established the system of sacrificial offerings with Adam after his fall, and Adam taught it to his descendants. This system was corrupted before the flood, and by those who separated themselves from the faithful followers of God and built the Tower of Babel. They sacrificed to gods of their own making instead of to the God of heaven. They offered sacrifices not because they had faith in the Redeemer to come, but because they thought they should please their gods by offering a great many animal sacrifices on their polluted idol altars. Their superstition led them to great excesses. They taught the people that the more valuable the sacrifice, the greater pleasure would it give their idol gods, and the greater would be the prosperity and riches of their nation. Therefore, human beings were often sacrificed to these senseless idols. To control the actions of the people, those nations had laws and regulations that were cruel in the extreme. Leaders whose hearts were not softened by grace were the ones making their laws. While they would ignore the most debasing crimes, a small offense would result in the most cruel punishment from those in authority. Moses had this in mind when he sent to Israel, "Surely I have taught you statutes and judgments, just as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should act according to them in the land which you go to possess. Therefore be careful to observe them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, who will hear all these statutes and say, 'Surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.' For what great nation is there that has God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us, for whatever reason we may call upon him? And what great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in all this law which I set before you this day?" Deuteronomy 4, verse 5-8. The Earthly Sanctuary. The tabernacle was made according to the commandment of God. The Lord raised up craftsmen and qualified them with more than natural abilities to perform the most demanding work. Neither Moses nor those workmen were left to plan the form and workmanship of the building. God himself devised the plan and gave it to Moses, with particular directions for its size and form and the materials to be used, and he specified every article of furniture that was to be in it. He showed Moses a miniature model of the heavenly sanctuary and commanded him to make everything according to the pattern shown him on the mountain. Moses wrote all the directions in a book and read them to the most influential people. Then the Lord required the people to bring a free will offering for making him a sanctuary so that he could dwell among them. And all the congregation of the children of Israel departed from the presence of Moses. Then everyone came whose heart was stirred, and everyone whose spirit was willing, and they brought the Lord's offering for the work of the tabernacle of meeting, for all its service, and for the holy garments. They came, both men and women, as many as had a willing heart, and brought earrings and nose rings, rings and necklaces, all jewelry of gold, that is, every man who made an offering of gold to the Lord. Great and expensive preparations were necessary. Rare and costly materials must be collected. But the Lord accepted only the free will offerings. The first requirements in preparing a place for God were devotion to the work of God and sacrifice from the heart.
And while the building of the sanctuary was going on, and the people were bringing their offerings to Moses, and he was presenting them to the workmen, all the wise men who labored in the work examined the gifts and decided that the people had brought enough, and even more than they could use. And Moses announced throughout the camp, saying, "Let neither man nor woman do any more work for the offering of the sanctuary." And the people were restrained from bringing. Recorded for later generations. The repeated complaints of the Israelites and the punishments of God's wrath because of their transgressions are recorded in sacred history for the benefit of God's people who would afterward live on the earth. Even more so, they were to provide a warning to those who would live near the close of time. In addition, their acts of devotion and their energy and liberality in bringing their free will offerings to Moses are recorded for the benefit of the people of God. Their cheerful preparing of material for the tabernacle is an example for all who truly love the worship of God. When preparing a building for him to meet with them, those who prize the blessing of God's sacred presence should show greater interest and energy in the sacred work in proportion to how they value their heavenly blessings more highly than their earthly comforts. They should realize that they are preparing a house for God.
It is important that a building prepared expressly for God to meet with his people should be arranged with care, made comfortable, neat, and convenient, for they are to dedicate it to God and present it to him, asking him to abide in that house and make it sacred by his holy presence. They should give enough willingly to the Lord to accomplish the work liberally, and then the workmen should be able to say, "Bring no more offerings," according to the pattern. After they completed building the tabernacle, Moses examined all the work, comparing it with the pattern and with directions he had received from God. He saw that every part of it agreed with the pattern, and he blessed the people. God gave a pattern of the ark to Moses, with special directions how to make it. The ark was built to contain the tablets of stone on which God engraved the Ten Commandments with his own finger. It was shaped like a chest and was overlaid with pure gold inside and out. It was ornamented with crowns of gold around the top. The cover of this sacred chest was called the mercy seat, and it was made of solid gold. Attached on each end of the mercy seat was a cherub of pure solid gold. Their faces were turned toward each other and were looking reverently downward toward the mercy seat. This represented all the heavenly angels looking with interest and reverence on the law of God deposited in the ark in the heavenly sanctuary. These cherubs had wings. One wing of each angel was stretched out above, while the other wing of each angel covered his body. The ark of the earthly sanctuary was patterned after the true ark in heaven. There, beside the heavenly ark, stand living angels, at either end of the ark, each with one wing overshadowing the mercy seat and stretching out above it, while the other wings are folded over their forms in an expression of reverence and humility. Moses was required to place the tablets of stone in the earthly ark. These were called the tablets of the testimony, and the ark was called the ark of the testimony, because they contained God's testimony in the Ten Commandments. Two apartments. The tabernacle was composed of two apartments, or rooms, separated by a curtain. All the furniture of the tabernacle was made of solid gold or was plated with gold. The curtains of the tabernacle were of various colors, most beautifully arranged, and in these curtains cherubim were woven, using threads of gold and silver. These were to represent the myriads of angels who are connected with the work of the heavenly sanctuary and who are ministering angels to God's people on the earth. Within the second curtain, or veil, was placed the Ark of the Testimony, and the beautiful, rich curtain was drawn in front of the sacred ark. This curtain did not reach to the top of the building. The glory of God, which was above the mercy seat, could be seen from both apartments, but in a much less degree from the first apartment. Directly in front of the ark, but separated from it by the curtain, was the golden altar of incense. The Lord himself had kindled the fire on this altar, and it was sacredly cherished by feeding it with holy incense, which filled the sanctuary with its fragrant cloud, day and night. Its fragrance extended for miles around the tabernacle. When the priest offered the incense before the Lord, he looked to the mercy seat. Although he could not see it, he knew it was there. And as the incense arose like a cloud, the glory of the Lord descended on the mercy seat and filled the most holy place and was visible in the holy place. The glory often so completely filled both apartments that the priest was unable to officiate and had to stand at the door of the tabernacle. The priest in the holy place, directing his prayer by faith to the mercy seat that he could not see, represents the people of God directing their prayers to Christ at the mercy seat in the heavenly sanctuary. They cannot see their mediator with the natural eye, but with the eye of faith they see Christ standing at the mercy seat. They direct their prayers to him, and with assurance they claim the benefits of his mediation. These sacred apartments had no windows to admit light. The candlestick, or lampstand, was made of purest gold and was kept burning night and day, giving light to both apartments. The light of the lamps on the candlestick reflected on the gold-plated boards at the sides of the building and on the sacred furniture and the beautifully colored curtains with cherubim woven with threads of gold and silver. The appearance was glorious beyond description. No language can describe the beauty, loveliness, and sacred glory which these apartments presented. The gold in the sanctuary reflected the colors of the curtains, which appeared like the different colors of the rainbow.
Only once a year could the high priest enter into the most holy place, after the most careful and solemn preparation. No mortal eye but that of the high priest could look upon the sacred grandeur of that apartment, because it was the special dwelling place of God's visible glory. The high priest always entered it with trembling, while the people waited in solemn silence for his return. Earnestly they asked God for his blessing. At the mercy seat, God conversed with the high priest. If he remained an unusually long time in the most holy place, the people were often terrified, fearing that the glory of the Lord had killed him because of their sins or some sin of the priest. But when they heard the tinkling sound of the bells on his garments, they were greatly relieved. He then came out and blessed the people. After the work of the tabernacle was finished, the cloud covered the tabernacle of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses was not able to enter the tabernacle of meeting, because the cloud rested above it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. For the cloud of the Lord was above the tabernacle by day, and fire was over it by night, in the sight of all the house of Israel throughout all their journeys. The tabernacle was made to be taken apart and carried with them in all their journeying. The guiding cloud. The Lord directed the Israelites in all their travels through the wilderness. When it was for the good of the people and the glory of God for them to pitch their tents in a certain place and stay there, God indicated his will to them by having the pillar of cloud rest low, directly over the tabernacle. And there it remained until God wanted them to journey again. Then the cloud of glory was lifted up high above the tabernacle, and then they traveled on. In all their journeyings, they maintained perfect order. Every tribe carried a standard, a flag, or banner, with the sign of their father's family on it, and every tribe was commanded to pitch their tents by their own standard. And when they traveled, the different tribes marched in order, every tribe under their own standard. When they rested from their journeyings, the tabernacle was erected, and then the different tribes pitched their tents in order, in just such a position as God commanded, around the tabernacle, at a distance from it. When the people journeyed, the Ark of the Covenant was carried in front of them, and the cloud of the Lord was above them by day when they went out from the camp. So it was, whenever the Ark set out, that Moses said, "Rise up, O Lord, let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you. And when it rested, he said, Return, O Lord, to the many thousands of Israel.